This is Carolyn Jones on Friday, May 10th, 2019. I'm at Francesca Benson's home as part of the You Now and Then project. I'm here today with Francesca Benson.
And I am Francesca Benson, and I'm the interviewee.
I'm Carolyn Jones, and I'm the interviewer. Okay, Francesca, let's start. First of all, thank you so much for agreeing to speak to us today as part of this project. It's a great honor to hear your story. As one of our founders, we were thrilled to have found you. We're thrilled to have you here today, so thank you. And I thought perhaps we could just start with a few general questions to understand a little bit about your background, because you weren't born in Princeton. I think you maybe came here at some point. Could you tell us a little bit about how you came to Princeton?
I came to Princeton in 1959 with my first husband, actually. Mm-hmm. He was a lawyer here in Princeton. And I was, and I have been all my life, an educator. So I taught in the Princeton schools. And then at a certain point, we decided to adopt a child. Actually, we went on to adopt two children, and my daughter is my second child, and you now's first child. So at that time, I don't know whether it was the law, but certainly the adoption agency's rule that a prospective mother had to stop working. So I was very sorry to give up my job as a teacher, but I understood. And so we adopted Dave, who is my wonderful son. And then 3 years later, we adopted Laura, who is my wonderful daughter. And, you know, I remember about Laura when she was small. By the time she was around 2.5, Dave was going to, it must have been nursery, yes, it was nursery school. And she would take her little boots and stand at the door and say, "I'm going to school too." But of course, there was no school. But one of the things that, I'll talk now about how I happened to get involved in the You Now Day Nursery and why it's even called that. Because although I was a member of the National Organization for Women, which at the time was pretty new, and I was a member of the Princeton chapter, and one of the things that we talked about was the fact that although there were nursery schools, mothers had to help with the nursery school. They had to cooperate. They had to give time. So obviously a woman couldn't work if her child was at nursery school. And I was not working at the time. You know, my children were small. But I had asked to volunteer because I had, of course, been an educator, and there were children who needed extra help. And I was always trying to juggle, could I give help to children who needed it? And we would talk about this at the NOW meetings. So it occurred to us that it would be really wonderful to have a good nursery school where children could go, mothers could work, and of course at the time, you know, when you think about it, everyone takes that for granted now, but at the time that was kind of a radical idea. Mm-hmm. And to give you an example of how radical it was, we started out, a couple of us, looking around at the local churches to see if there was space where we could start a nursery school. And in fact, we found one, and we talked with the, what it was called. I guess it was director of the building and grounds. Mm-hmm. And this fellow was very encouraging and spent a lot of time with us. What were you going to be doing? How would we get our teachers? That sort of thing. And just a he thought this was a great idea.
Can I just stop to ask to clarify which church was this?
I'd rather not say.
Okay.
Because it's not a compliment.
Right.
As you will see. When our proposal came to the board, and actually, this was not a conservative church, I have to say. The board voted it down, saying that the board members thought that women should stay home with their children.
What did you think when you heard this?
Here it was April, and of course, we assumed that since this man was so encouraging, mm-hmm. that we wouldn't have any trouble.
Right.
And in fact, he quit the board.
Wow.
After that. He was so disgusted, mm-hmm. with that decision.
And so this was April 1970, we're talking.
That's right.
Right.
And by that time, of course, people had heard about it, and women were calling us saying, oh, can I put my name on the list?
Mm-hmm.
And we had a couple of teachers lined up. Mm-hmm. So we were all ready. And so I must say, there were a couple of days of horror when we sat around wringing our hands. And then someone said, we should go to the university. And a friend of mine who was connected with the university said, well, you should go to the university, but you know, it always takes a long time for the university to make that kind of decision. Mm-hmm. So, but what do we didn't have a choice. We went to the university. I cannot believe how quickly the university responded. But as I think I mentioned to you before, and maybe this isn't the time to mention this, but years later, after you now was up and thriving, I was at a party and someone introduced me to a woman who said, I know who you are. You are one of the founders of the Unio Daniels. And I said, yes, that's right. And she said, that saved my life. I had cancer. This was years later.
Mm-hmm.
I had cancer. I had to have chemotherapy all that year. I didn't know what I was going to do with my little boy. And then you now opened. And he had a wonderful year there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was so happy and relaxed that I could take care of myself. And I thought, I wonder if she had a voice in making that happen.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. And I didn't ask her, but...
So did it surprise you that the university responded
so quickly?
Or
oh, yeah.
They responded at all?
Oh. I didn't know enough to know what they would think one way or another.
Uh-huh.
But it was wonderful, really. It was wonderful. I mean, really, just a couple of months,
uh-huh.
and they made that decision.
Uh-huh.
So,
before we talk about UNO itself, can we go back a little bit to how you got involved in the local chapter of NOW? Do you remember what attracted you to the organization?
I read Betty Friedan's book.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there were many women at the time who were saying, she's right. And, of course, at that time, this business about you, if you're married, you can't be a good mother unless you stay home with your child, and fathers go out to work and you stay home. And I guess probably my mother was a very bright, well-educated, she had a master's degree, and she was very unhappy at home. And once she went back to work, when we were grown, her whole life changed. She just became herself again. And I was lucky as an educator because I could have both, really. And I think it's important for men and women to be able to work part-time and take care of young children, too, and be with them, you know, enjoy them.
Mm-hmm.
But so I, by that time, We still lived in Lawrence Township, but we were moving to Princeton.
Would this be around 1969?
Yes.
Or earlier, do you think?
That's right. It was just around that time. And because I remember driving into NOW meetings from Lawrence Township mm-hmm. to Princeton. Elaine Showalter, I don't know if you know her name, but she was a very active early member mm-hmm. of NOW. I mean, there are so many women who, well-known women who are members of that chapter.
Can you tell me, you say you remember driving into the meetings, can you remember any specific issues that were discussed or sort of what your feelings were around those meetings? Or impressions?
Well, of course, there was a little group that was particularly interested in childcare. Mm-hmm. So I remember Mary Joyce Mulroy, mm-hmm. and I wish I knew where Mary Joyce was right now, because she and I really spearheaded this thing. And her little girl and Laura were friends, and I'll show you the picture of the two children. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we were right there ready for the nursery school.
And was she an educator too, or it was just the issue resonated with her?
Her husband was at the university, teaching at the university, and she had a child who would mm-hmm. be mm-hmm. ready for it. You know, she was a writer, mm-hmm. so that she needed time to write. But I guess all those issues, which many of which are, of course, not issues anymore, although certainly the whole idea of being a feminist, which seemed to me so basic, that males and females are equal. Oh, my heavens, you know? Yeah. Are they? Of course they are, so...
And so were you involved in any of the consciousness-raising groups?
Yes.
So when you say you remember driving in, were you going to those meetings, or were they more the sort of the formal...
I remember some of the consciousness-raising, right. And in fact, that's funny, because a friend and I were talking about having a meeting of some of the women we know, and we were going to title it Consciousness Raising 50 Years Ago and Now. And how is it now, 50 years later?
I'm so fascinated by that. I was speaking to another chapter member who was part of these groups and saying, yes, I think it would be great to have these now. Can you recall any particular details about what a consciousness raising meeting was like 50 years ago?
Yes.
What sorts of issues you discussed?
I think my memory is a lot of issues that came up were, and I know these issues still come up, women who said, I'm doing everything in the house. And my husband comes home and he drops his coat and sits down. And, you know, I love him, but he expects him to pick his coat up. And doesn't he realize how much I have to do? So that kind of conversation was a very common one in consciousness-raising meetings. I hear my granddaughters talking about, for instance, I have a granddaughter who wasn't at Princeton, saying, you know, it's very hard to get your voice heard in a classroom if there are too many men. They just take over. And they feel like they have a right to talk, and you don't. Mm-hmm. And I have ideas, too. And so mm-hmm. I think, well, anyhow. I actually, in my life, have been lucky, because both my first husband and George, my second husband, are respectful men who do their share, mm-hmm. have been that. But and, of course, you know, there's the other extreme is how much domestic violence there is, really mm-hmm. terrible. Mm-hmm. So there are so many other issues, but I think it's all about women being treated equally. having equal opportunities.
Right. So the consciousness raising groups for you, was it an opportunity to get advice or to just sort of discuss these issues?
But to express what was important to me, mm-hmm. and then, as I say, because childcare and education, you know, as an educator, I wanted my children to have good education. At the same time, I didn't want to give up my life to make sure that they did, so kind of combination.
Right. So looking through some of the papers from that early New Jersey chapter, it looks like daycare became an issue when Betty Friedan came to Princeton in 1969.
Oh, yeah, that's interesting.
And she challenged this NOW chapter, which had just formed in 1969, to focus on two issues, one of which was all-day childcare, so mm-hmm. women could return to work. And there was someone by the name of Joan Gray who was on the committee.
Yes,
who,
right.
Do you remember her?
Yes, I remember Joan. Yes, yes. I think, in fact, yes, she was on that committee with us. And I think she moved. Mm. And I'm not sure that she had a child that age, but she's, yes, I remember her.
Right.
I'm pretty sure she moved, but yes.
Because her name was in the beginning on that discussion, and then it doesn't appear anymore. So that would make sense.
I think she would have.
And then your name is very prevalent in all of the discussions, and particularly it looks like when we run a search through the newspaper archives, your name is sort of fronting the enterprise. So do you recall how it was that you came to be someone who was interested in the issue to suddenly the name of the school, the name behind the school?
You mean you now?
Yeah, well, in those months before the school actually opened, in an advert in Town Topics in, I think, February, maybe it was in April 1970, there was your name. Contact Franz Donica for more information. Do you remember how you got to be in that position?
I don't remember, although, as I said, there's a picture here, and that's from Town Topics, with one of the teachers, Roz Patrick, and was a lovely teacher. And I think it's just, you know, I think it's probably because Laura was so eager to go to school. And, you know, Laura's got a mind of her own, and she always was sort of putting out her ideas. So let's ignore that. So I'm not sure. It's just something that, of course, was on my mind at that time because it was an issue for me at that time. And then there were a number of us who said that's something that and it seemed kind of ridiculous to me. I remember visiting one of the cooperative nursery schools and being given a kind of patronizing little talk about how important it was that mothers should help out and should be there and on. And I thought, no, this is your job. If you're doing your job, you don't need me here. Mm-hmm. I mean, my children have me the rest of the time. When they're in school, the teacher can do it. Of course, maybe I was speaking as a teacher, you know.
Do you think that was an unusual opinion to have at that time? Your opinion?
Well, certainly in society, it was unusual. As I say, can you imagine this church saying mothers should be home with their children, so we don't want to give space to an all-day nursery school? I mean, that's amazing to me, thinking back. That would be said in my lifetime.
It's certainly amazing to me now that would happen, but I wonder, what was Princeton like in the...
Oh, I would say it's more conservative then, yes.
And where did you grow up?
In Boston, outside of Boston, yeah.
Yeah. And so when you moved to Princeton in the late 50s and then you lived in the area through the 60s, would you say it was more conservative from what you were used to, or was the political climate quite similar to what you were used to?
Again, I'm speaking, it's interesting, I was speaking as an educator. I grew up in Boston, which was pretty conservative. After teaching there for a year, a friend and I moved to Washington, D.C. At the time, Washington, D.C. public schools had just been integrated. And the superintendent was white, but there were two co-assistant superintendents, one white, who was the head of personnel, and one African-American who was the head of curriculum. And I have to say it was a wonderful curriculum. And I taught there for several years. But I taught in the school I did because when I was interviewed, the assistant superintendent, who was white, said, "We're going to place you in a school where you'll be very happy." And she took out a map and she pointed to a part of Washington that was the opposite from where I had my apartment. And she said, "We're going to put you here." And I said, "Well, you know, I live on this side of Washington. Is there any school that might have an opening here?" And she said, "Oh, you wouldn't want to be in one of those schools. They're Negro schools." And I said, "Oh, it wouldn't matter to me. I would just like to be close to where I live." And she said, she kind of banged her hand on the table and said, "All right, we'll put you in one of those schools. You'll see what it's like." Wow. And it was astounding, isn't it? Some story. But it was very, very lucky for me because I was given a first grade, which I'd never taught, in which nobody should have put me in a first grade because I was too inexperienced. Mm-hmm. But the other first grade teacher was this wonderful teacher. Her name was Evelyn Timus, an African-American woman who was a magnificent teacher. Mm-hmm. And she probably knew right away what I didn't know. And she would say, "You know what, Fran, why don't you bring this class in and we'll sort of team teach." Mm-hmm. And then, of course, she would teach. And I would watch and think, "Oh, my God, I've got to learn some of this." So I was very lucky, and I taught there for several years. I loved that school. Mm-hmm. And then I was married, and we came to Princeton. So, of course, after all that, Princeton seemed pretty conservative. Right. And, in fact, at an early party, I was hired to teach at Johnson Park School, which was not yet open.
What do you mean it wasn't open?
It was being built.
Oh, I see.
And it wasn't ready.
Okay.
So, in fact, and that's a whole other story, which mm-hmm. is kind of interesting, coming to Princeton. But I remember at a party, when I mentioned this, that I was going to be teaching at Johnson Park School, someone at the party who I didn't know said, "Oh, that's going to be great. There are no Jews or blacks there."
Wow.
Imagine that. Yeah. So that someone could feel he had a right to say that, you know, to someone he didn't know.
Right. She felt comfortable to have said that to
really you. Amazing. Mm. And in fact, Johnson Park, I have a lot of happy memories, but I went from a school where the parents were only too happy to have a teacher in the classroom and were grateful for anything, mm-hmm. to a school where parents would ask me over for tea and then say, "There are some ideas that I have about spelling that I'd like to tell you about, and some materials that I would like you to use." So went from one extreme to the other.
How long did you teach at Johnson Park before?
So I taught there for another 4 years And that's when we decided to adopt and I had to leave.
Okay.
So I had talked by that time for 7 years.
Right. And so then your next teaching gig after that was UNOW, is that correct?
Well, I didn't actually ever teach at UNOW.
Okay.
No, I mean, I got it off the ground. But no, you know, Betty Soloway came in soon after that.
Can you tell me about Betty Soloway?
Oh,
at what point did she come?
You know, she, now, you realize this is 50 years ago and my memory is not perfect, but Betty was an excellent teacher and then became director.
Mm-hmm.
And Margie Ravindranath was a wonderful teacher, and Rosalind, her picture's there. So, you know, and at that point, because soon after Laura started, I was asked to teach part-time in Trenton. This was a kind of, this really got me going in another direction as an educator, because a friend taught at Junior 5 in Trenton, which was an elementary and high school, and the principal was looking for someone who would work with two students, because the fifth grade class had had a series of substitutes, none of whom would stay, and the reason was these two boys. And so I was asked, I had been a teacher, would I come in 2 mornings a week? And I said, sure, and teach in the teacher's room. I remember that's where I met the two boys, Curtis and Ernie. And Curtis and Ernie could not read, so of course, in fifth grade, they spent their time causing trouble.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no wonder, right? I mean, how could you? So Curtis and Ernie and I started developing an approach to reading. You know, they started telling me stories, and I would write them down, and then I would read them back, and then they would read them. And I got so involved in the idea of teaching reading that I went back and got my master's in reading disabilities at Temple. And, it, you know, one class at a time at night, so I could do that. And then I became a learning consultant, and then, after, so.
Right. So going back to you now in those early days, you were, so were you the acting director until Betty Soloway was hired?
Yes.
Or even, the school opened in, I think, the second week of September
1970.
Yes. Were you still the director at that point?
Well, you know, I'm not sure. But I think Mary Joyce and I were kind of keeping things going in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was really a casual event. although we had worked on curriculum together, and the teachers had, and
did you hire the teachers?
Yes.
Oh.
We hired the teachers.
Tell me about
yes.
how you found those first teachers.
You know, I think we probably put ads in the paper,
mm-hmm.
and then met with them and talked to them about their experience, and
I think one of the things that struck me as I was looking through records of those early teachers is that they were quite well qualified.
Yes, well.
And was that something
that
you
important.
Were actively seeking?
Oh, yes.
I mean, they were well
yes.
qualified for the time, you know,
right.
the early childcare
yes.
has become
right.
professionalized. But do you
right.
remember that being something that you and Mary Joyce were particularly driven by? Is you know,
well, of course,
school.
we were the child's parents, so of course we wanted well. And of course, I had been in education. I knew from just working the difference between a good teacher and a not good teacher, and a qualified and of course, there's more to it than just the qualifications. But think. I started out as a teacher with no training or experience at all. In Boston, I started in Boston, and in Boston, if you took a teacher's exam and did well on the exam, you were assigned to a class. So that was in itself a real learning experience. I was very lucky because I was placed in a school where all the teachers were in their 50s and 60s. I was just 20. And they thought it was a terrible mistake to hire me, so they gave me a small, well-behaved class. Mm-hmm. And in fact, the second grade teacher, the first day of school, as the children filed in and quietly sat in their seats and looked innocently at me, Miss Phelan said with this threatening voice, "If they give you one bit of trouble, you just send them back to me." I was very tempted to say, "I'll never send you back to her." So part of it was, I guess, you know, developing my own belief in mm-hmm. what good teaching was, mm-hmm. which was really working with children, seeing what they need to learn next. Mm-hmm. Learning a lot on your own and then coming back, trying that. So, anyhow.
Do you remember, as you were coming up to those last few months of the school opening, do you remember dealing with the university at all? With anyone
you know,
in the administration?
I don't. And I'm sure there was someone. Mm-hmm. But I don't. I was very focused on the program mm. and making sure that the teacher, you know, there was a whole question about what could we pay and, mm. you know, handling the finances. It was...
Does the name Halsey Bowen sound
yes,
familiar?
Yes, and of Mary course. Practice? Yes, she probably was the administrator mm-hmm. who was most helpful, yes, Halsey mm-hmm. was, mm-hmm. yeah.
Right. And do you think it helped that Mary Joyce Mulroy, you said her husband, was connected with the university?
I don't know. He was in the classics department. I don't think so. I mean, I don't think he got really involved in it because he was a young teacher and probably more concerned about his own mm-hmm. work at that time. And, you know, we only had a few months to do this. So, when I think about it, I'm not sure how we did it. You know, when you think about it.
I don't know how you did it, because... It all happened from that first discussion
really.
In late 1969
yes.
to
yeah.
the establishment yeah. of a school, and there was nothing like that school in Princeton already. So you
That's
sort
right.
of broken the mold of what a nursery school
yeah.
might be.
And probably when you think about it, you think about if you, I mean, this was my second 3-year-old, and you know I had a mother who read to us. I had a father who was a mathematician who did a lot of math games. You know, you think about what a child... There were things I was doing with my children. And that's really what teachers at that age are doing anyhow. They're reading to the children, talking, giving them games, giving them... blocks and things like that. It was really an extension, really, of our own living rooms, in a sense. We knew the stories that were nice. We bought the right books that they would love. And I don't know.
Do you remember being aware at the time that you'd achieved something norm-breaking in Princeton?
what I remember thinking was that it was time that there was something like this available. And you know, you could go down in the classroom and see the happy children and the happy teachers, and you say, this is working. Of course it was working, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, we felt very lucky, because here at the, you know, we were at the brink of disaster, and then suddenly something opened up, and here's this space, and here's the yard with... I think the university gave us equipment. I don't even remember that.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was a real surprise, a delightful surprise, you know. So it's funny.
What do you remember about the building itself, the premises?
Well, I remember that downstairs room was dark. But it didn't seem so that I like light myself, but it didn't seem to matter to the children. They all seemed to be having a happy time. I don't ever remember a teacher complaining about that. So, and you know, they were giving us what they had.
Mm-hmm.
So, it was.
And do you have any memories about how you set tuition rates? So, when the school started, it was $28 a week. Do you remember if that was cheap for the time?
You know, what I remember was kind of the struggle that we had between not charging too much and at the same time paying the teachers what we could, and it was of course not enough. So that was always difficult. And I'm sure that it was probably too much for a lot of parents and certainly not enough for the teachers.
So Laura was there on the first day.
Laura.
Oh, okay. That's a great accent. And how long was she at UNOW for?
Oh, she was there for several years.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. She never wanted to. She was never sick. She was never sick. Kids would be sick around her. I said to her, Laura, you're so lucky. And she said, does that mean that, what was it she said, that I'm working harder? I said, no, it just means that you're lucky that you can go to school every day because you're healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
So she was lucky.
And what
she loved it.
And what do you remember her enjoying about
just
the school?
Just that every morning she was ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I really remember,
mm-hmm.
that she was ready to go. And she was always ready to come home, you know. She that, I guess that says something about her, too.
Right. So when the school opened, on that first day that it opened, were you still involved in the day-to-day running of the school, or had you then been able to step back?
Yes, actually, I think both Mary Joyce and I do remember our feeling that the sooner the school got on its own two feet, the better, because we had other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember that there were people in now who wanted to kind of, there was a whole question about the name. And there were people who wanted to call it the Now Day Nursery and to step in and take charge because it was now.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe more than I thought was necessary. I mean, these were not people who were involved in education. So, you know, it was almost like, now we'll prove something from a feminist point of view, and I was uncomfortable with that. But anyhow, and we had our own lives, and now we felt things were all, you know, going.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and did you continue to go to consciousness raising groups or
mm-hmm.
the other
yeah.
things?
Yeah.
And what do you remember the issues being about after the school had opened that sort of achieved their goal?
It's interesting. As I mentioned, friends are talking about having a meeting to talk about consciousness raising then and now. And I thought about this, of course. I'm 83, so, you know, this is not the typical CR. But wouldn't it be interesting to have a consciousness raising group of women of different ages?
Yes.
I would love to be in a group like that. Because, of course, in a way, it isn't. It's maybe a little about age. Certainly, I don't have the same issues that a 30-year-old has now. But there are still some issues that go through the whole spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I had a very interesting, as I said, my both children are adopted. And I got into a conversation a couple of weeks ago with my son and his wife. And I was talking about how important it is that women have abortion rights. And my son, who of course is adopted, said, but you know, if everybody has abortion rights, what would happen to somebody like me? Because I wouldn't have been born. And I said, oh, Dave, you know, you've suddenly made me see a point of view that I hadn't thought about. And in fact, I went on to say, you know, actually, I was 15 months younger than my sister, and I'm sure my mother did not want another baby, and it'd be interesting to know.
Right.
Would she have said, well, no, I can't do it?
Yeah.
So, of course, but it would be interesting to hear, are there some issues that go across the ages, and then others that are more specific, of course, I'm sure there are.
Going back to you now, do you remember U-League? It was the nursery school in the same building.
Yes.
Do you remember what was different about it, or was it very much the same?
I have to tell you that I remember several comments from teachers, kind of patronizing comments that it's too bad that there has to be a school where children's mothers are not involved.
So, do you remember how you responded?
Well, our children's mothers love their children the same as those mothers do.
Were they aware that you were an educator?
No, probably not. I don't think so.
Do you know how you now and now became disassociated? It was about 1973.
Well, because the nursery school really became its own. And it was connected with the university. I think that I don't know, we must have talked about calling it. I don't remember that issue. But I think you now was a perfect name for it. And the university was really very supportive. And I remember thinking that it shouldn't be used for political reasons. The name itself was enough. And I didn't think it should be used, especially by people who hadn't done anything to make it happen.
Looking back now, and maybe even 5 years after the school had been running and proven itself to be a success, did you feel proud of your achievements?
Oh, sure. I felt actually lucky. Lucky that it happened, lucky that it probably, in fact, I was thinking about that. Isn't it lucky that that church that turned us down didn't accept us, because we would never have been able to stay there, because, you know, all religious organizations are in change all the time. And we were so lucky that we did look at the beautiful new building there. which is amazing to me. It's amazing to me. In fact, that would be my question. Who convinced the university to build that beautiful building for the nursery school? Do you know the answer to that?
I have an idea, but it's an interesting, complicated story in itself.
Really?
I would love for us to be able to tell that story.
Yeah.
Because it's a great question.
Yeah. Really? It's wonderful. It's really wonderful. And it probably says something about the arc of how women and their children are seen, and how children's needs and women's needs are seen. And of course, there are many more women working at the university. And women at the university, they weren't even attending at that time. So,
I think certainly for us, the current crop of trustees and parents, we're in awe of what you all did 50 years ago because you were pioneers. You may have been aware at some level that you were breaking norms, but to a certain degree it just seemed like the obvious thing for you to have done. But you were, as you say, you were at the beginning of an arc, which was had made a profound difference in this town, and I think to many women and children.
Yeah.
So this is what sparked this project, is to find those pioneers and find out about the story and to say thank you. Now when you have got 50 years of hindsight and you look back at what you were like, you know, that those pioneering ideas and what your vision was at the time, do you have any reflections on what you were working for now that 50 years have passed and some things have changed and some things haven't?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think I've been an educator all my life. Both my parents were educators. In fact, when I graduated from college, I had an offer to write for Horticulture Magazine in Boston, and I was looking forward, so I had been editor of the college newspaper. And my father said, and my father never asked me to do anything. My father said, I think you should just try teaching for a year. Just 1 year. Ask them if they'll wait a year. I said, I don't think they will. And he said, just ask them. So I asked them, and they said, oh, sure. And I just taught for a year, and I never went back. And I've been in education all my life. And in fact, I've been over at the high school working with some students, kids who have come from other countries. They don't speak English well. They're having a hard time. And it's so interesting. It's so interesting to me to be with someone who's trying to learn, and you're trying to figure out what would help. And it's such an interesting challenge. You know, people always said to me, oh, you're a teacher, you must be so patient. No, it isn't about patience for me. It's about the interesting challenge of trying to figure out what would work, what would help. It's so nice to see people learning. So that's what I would say.
Thank you. And my last question is, in 50 years' time, when you now is 100, what would you hope that you now as a school would be focusing on in the next 50 years?
Well, basically helping children to learn and grow. I mean, that's you know. The first thing that came to my mind right then was that I was at McCaffrey's 2 weeks ago, and I don't know whether you shop there, but there were bags, shopping bags, that children at Littlebrook School had made and designed. And they all had designs that were you know, emphasizing the climate. Be careful of our water because it's important to all life, etc. And I thought how wonderful that is that a teacher, and in fact I wrote them a letter at Little Brook School, that the teacher has encouraged the children to be thinking about the future, human life, animal life, you know. And so that's what I guess, you always think ahead, what will be good for the children of the future, the communities, the world. So it would be all of those things.
Wonderful. Well, thank you, Francesca, so much for taking the time to speak to me and to tell me a little bit about how the school started and what it was like for you over those decades. Mm. It's been such a privilege to speak to you.
Thank you.
Thank you for your time. This is the end of the recording.